Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Fourth and final hour. Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Thursday afternoon. Sunny and 70. Here in Middle Tennessee. Beautiful Thursday. Hope you're having a great day. Elliot Freeman joins us every Thursday at this time from Sportsnet. 31 Thoughts. Find his work there. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Hanging in there. How about you guys?
We're doing pretty well. It's a long walk, as you guys know. It's a really long walk, but we're making the best of it.
You're the perfect guy to weigh in on this because we got into this discussion the other day on the show. The Last Dance, you know, that's been airing on Sunday nights on ESPN.
Yep.
And then after this, episodes five and six on Sunday, Scott Van Pelt and SportsCenter came on afterwards, and Charles Barkley was the guest. And Charles Barkley said that in his lifetime, there's been no bigger sports stars than Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, basically everything. You know, in their sport, their persona, just everywhere they went, you know, it was people were crazed. And it got us going down. We ended up talking about it for well over an hour on the show. We got a bunch of calls of who else would you put on that list where they had this gigantic persona and basically there were rock stars everywhere they went. And we were trying to, you know, weigh in on a guy like Wayne Gretzky. How would you go about trying to describe Wayne Gretzky in his prime? What was it like for the great one, wherever he went and whatever team he was on? What was it like?
Well, before I do him, I would say that Muhammad Ali would be the guy that I would put on that list because he was
definitely
such a global phenomenon too.
Yes.
And Muhammad Ali came to Toronto in 2001 or 2002, and it was still a huge deal. So, and that was, you know, 20 years after he'd last fought. So he would be the guy I'd name. You know, I didn't cover when Gretzky was at his apex, at least as a player in the mid 80s, I was still a teenager, so I didn't cover them, but I remember going to games and it was a huge deal. There would be people, it was one of the first times you really saw that when a player came to town, it wasn't just the sports media that was covering them. It was the news media. It was the entertainment media. How many people were pulling them in different directions to do different things? Around Toronto, could he do a commercial shoot here? Could he do something there? It was big. But, you know, the one thing that, you know, you say about Gretzky and people around hockey longer than I do is how many teams are in the league if it's not for Gretzky?
Great point. Great point. We actually brought that up.
When he came into the NHL, it went to 21 teams. How many, San Jose, Anaheim, that's Gretzky. You know, is Nashville because of Gretzky? I think you could make an argument.
I think Pete Weber brought that up yesterday on the show with us, that because of his move to L.A., how that paved the way, right, for other markets that you're bringing up. It was, I think he was going down the same road you are of it. It showed that you could be, you know, those markets could be cool and look how big Gretzky built up the LA market and Southern California market where it wasn't viewed as a hockey market and, you know, how that may have paved the way for a lot of markets like Nashville and Columbus and Tampa. And, you know, we know the list.
You see, the thing, and the interesting thing to me about it is now, and I'm thinking about this on my feet while you ask the question, and I'm thinking about it. So, you know, you talk about Tiger Woods, he made golf more popular, no question about it. Did he put golf anywhere it wasn't already?
It's a great point because, obviously, when we started taking a bunch of calls and getting a lot of feedback, you start, you know, comprising a huge list. And, of course, we had people calling Arnold Palmer, you know, Jack Nicklaus. And to your point, those guys like that had already built the sport. I think then the argument for Tiger Woods is then he took it to, like, a different zip code.
Yes, he took it to a higher level. He made it he took it to a broader audience, and he made it more financially viable, I think. But did he take it anywhere in terms – like, you know, the NBA, Jordan, huge superstar. But most people credit Magic Johnson and Larry Bird for saving the league. They were just a little bit older than Jordan. They were – what, 5 years ahead of him?
Yeah.
Jordan's almost like the Tiger Woods who took it to a new level, but Johnson and Bird were probably the guys who saved the league. Like, off the top of my head, and I'm sure, like, Tom Brady to me is probably as big a deal as it gets now. To LeBron James is probably as big a deal as it gets now. But those guys aren't necessarily going to put their league anywhere it isn't. I don't know how many guys are as responsible for maybe expansion, men or women, are as responsible for expansion as Gretzky is.
Yeah, that is a really, really good point. I think now that you've put it in those terms, you know, I almost feel like because somebody brought up Serena Williams, you know, not that women's tennis didn't exist, but I don't know. You had Chrissy Everett. I mean, there, yeah, gosh, you know.
She's probably like Tiger Woods in the sense that she took it to an audience.
She took it to, there you go.
Maybe excluded by it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So how would you answer this, Elliot? Then who is today's rock? Who's the biggest rock star in hockey today? Wherever they go, people show up. Who is that guy today? How would you answer that?
Well, you know, I think there have been guys who fill arenas. You know, Crosby certainly does. I remember there was a time where Crosby and Ovechkin were in the league that, you know, you didn't go to every city every year, right? And teams really complained about that. They would say, how can I sell my tickets when I'm telling my fans there might be a year you don't get to see Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin? And the league changed that. For that reason. You know, Ovechkin's probably the closest thing to the rock star in the way he carries himself. As you know, Crosby's understated. He likes it that way. Ovechkin is demonstrative. You know, you see him with the different colored visor and the exuberance he uses on the ice. He's probably closest to that. Now, I will say, I think this younger generation is scratching the surface about where it's going to go. I mean, McDavid, he sells tickets. Everywhere he goes, people want to see that guy play. But I think Matthews has a chance to be that guy too, absolutely. He's a scorer. He's an incredible scorer. And I think he started to put himself out there with some of the fashion he does with his mustache. He loves people ripping, like, the greasiness of his mustache and stuff. I think he's got an edge to that personality. Plus, he's got, you know, the unique background, a guy from Arizona, too. So I think that, you know, I think this young generation has a chance. We're sort of taking the handcuffs off the personality now. I think these guys have a chance to really take it to another level in terms of what their personalities are allowed to do. And I think Matthews in particular has a chance to really be at the forefront of that because he's a great player. He's going to be one of the best players, and he's got that little smirk that he kind of likes to be out there. Like, I got to tell you, like Roman Josi, you know, the way he carries himself, the way he likes to look, I think but you can't force a guy's personality, right? He likes to be understated. PK was, like, I think if Roman had a bit more of, like, PK's personality, I think he could have been a guy who could do that. Now, obviously, PK is a guy who's completely unafraid, and he's taken hockey to places where it hasn't gone.
Talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet.ca. He's got the 31 thoughts out right now. And so, Elliot, let's hit you with a couple of thoughts that you had in there. Let's start with your sense right now. Your gut feeling is 24 teams if and when the league resumes. Tell us why.
I just think that there's a couple of reasons. There's three. Number one is safety. If you've been following, if you follow any league right now, the stories are all the same, right? You know, the NFL, you guys know the Titans, they're going to be releasing their schedule tonight. They're having a big show. But, you know, I saw stories today that a lot of this could be predicated on testing. In the NBA, they're concerned about how many of these individual team facilities they can open. And Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks, he said yesterday on a podcast, I'm not opening ours because I'm not convinced we can keep everybody safe and the testing is available. So I think that it's going to, and if you've watched any of those highlights of the Korean Baseball League, you know, everybody who's going in, they have to have the swab and the temperature test. You know, are we going to be ready for that? So I think until all of this is available, and the leagues are very concerned about PR of them jumping to the front of the line, not only for testing, but for the PPEs, the proper equipment, the masks, the gloves, all of that. So I think it's not going to happen until these questions are answered, these supply questions are answered, and that isn't a short-term thing. So that's number one. And I think because of that, there's the danger of time. You don't have a long runway here. You know, you're talking about starting next year, December, January, so let's work backwards. The league and the players have agreed that they need between 45 and 55 days between the Stanley Cup and the start of next season. So you're at a month and a half, 2 months. So if you're waiting for a little while till all this testing's ready, and then you've got to have a month and a half off to 2 months before you can start the next year, you know, the calendar is not your friend. And I think the third thing, guys, is I think there's a number of players on teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, that have no chance to make the playoffs, who've kind of said they don't want a part of it. And some of them have said it publicly. Drew Doughty was one. Others have said it privately. It's out there. People are aware of it. And I think they're kind of I did have one manager say to me, if you're having a race to the playoffs and there's two divisions, not yours, because there's still seven teams that could make the playoffs there, but if there's a couple divisions where, you know, you've got three teams that are playing key players not there, is it fair competitively? So, again, it's my opinion. I can't say for sure it's going to happen, but I think we're looking more and more like a 2014 playoff as opposed to a resumption of the regular season.
You bring up so many great practical questions in this. Like, we're watching the baseball, and you actually can see players wearing masks. They're playing catch. They're out in the field. They're wearing masks. They're up at the plate. You know, hockey, you're going so hardcore, those hard bursts at full throttle. I can't imagine a player could play with any kind of mask on. Would that be true? And what about the officials? You bring up them as well.
Well, I just wondering, like someone said to me, like, are they going to have to wear masks? And I don't think anyone knows the answer to the question, but I think it's at least possible. Like, to me, guys, like I'm also wondering about the coaches. Like, your guy, John Hines, he's younger. So, you know, I don't know if you worry about him as much, but I count it. I think there's 12 coaches above age 55, 5 above 60, and there's some pretty prominent assistant coaches who are 16 above too. I know it's something they've kind of said, you know, what about this? And I don't know if they have an answer yet. They'll eventually go to their doctors and say, or their medical leaders and say, what do you think? But I think it's a big question. You know, are you worried about the health of some of your people, like executives too? There's executives who are even older than that. So I think that people are kind of saying, yes, we'd like to play, and I think we hope to play, but there's a lot of practical considerations here that we don't know the answer to yet, and we'd like to have the answer quickly, but we might not necessarily have it. So I think a lot of people are really unsure.
There were many games, Elliot, here that we can reference back to that Peter LaViolette thinking he didn't like a call. He should maybe wear a mask moving forward, for sure.
That probably would have helped him out. That way.
Yeah, when he takes his gum out, he should put on a mask if he was on the bench.
Yeah, right. Peter wasn't always very happy with the referees, I can tell you that much. You guys know that better than me.
Peter wasn't always happy with certain things.
Elliot, this may be more interesting to you and I, who potentially could be involved directly in how the television broadcast is disseminated, if and when they get going here. But you had some extensive discussions with the Sportsnet people on the different options there. What's the simplest way to describe that for our listeners?
Well, the simplest way to describe it is that my boss didn't call me today, so he was not happy with the article. That's a good thing.
Uh-oh.
Basically, I think I get a lot of tweets from fans or DMs from fans on Twitter asking, you know, what's this going to look like? And so I just said, you know what, I can ask them. And, you know, I think we're looking at, okay, we're almost 99%, if not 100% sure there's going to be no fans. So where can you put cameras in places that can give people a unique angle? You know, where can we go that can show people a different level of the game? And there's this thing called the spider cam. And if you're a football fan, you see it in particular. It basically goes right above the field, and it goes on a cable up and down. It moves, so you can sort of see the action as it's unfolding live at more of a right, basically right on top or right behind the play. And, you know, one of the reasons they can't use it in the NHL is because the scoreboard is too low. And now with no fans, you can probably raise the scoreboard and try that. And they're discussing that. They're looking at all sorts of different angles about where they could put cameras. They're talking about sound. The arena is going to be empty. So what do we do? And, you know, he mentioned that the league and the players will discuss how much of that audio do you want to bring in the house. I'm sure there's things that are going to be said on the ice that nobody wants people to hear. And also, you know, someone had told me that it had been discussed about bringing hiring a DJ, bringing them into the arena and to play music even while the game is going on to create an atmosphere. And that's something that's been discussed. And I think the other thing, and I know for you guys in particular, because you guys work the broadcast, you know, will we be there? And I think there is a chance that small crews can be there, but I think it's also a chance that a feed gets sent to all of the different TV stations that broadcast the games, and you do it from the studio. And you put your National Predator broadcast look on it. And, you know, you guys host it from your studio and you call it from your studio and you put your graphics package on it so it looks the same to your fan base, though it's not there. I think all of that stuff is possible. But what it says to me is they're looking at all sorts of different ways. Instead of looking at about what we don't have, look at it as what we're given the opportunity to do. And I think they are – I know I was told they're having multiple conversations about how to make that work.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. So I've been – something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I've been waiting all week to ask you this. Earlier today we talked to Ryan McGee from ESPN, covers college football, also a NASCAR fan, covers NASCAR. And as you know, or may know, Elliot, NASCAR announced last week they're going to come back on May 17th. And so I've been curious of how much they have talked to other leagues, how, you know, if other leagues have reached out to them. And I know there have been conversations. My whole point with this is, do we believe that this situation might make the leagues realize they should talk more? They should bounce ideas off of each other, because I don't really know how much they do or have up until this point. So what are your thoughts? Do you feel like that this is going to open the lines of communication between the major sports in Canada and America and all over a little bit more since they've had to do it through this?
I would think so. I would think the answer to that question is yes. because it's pretty obvious now they're sharing a ton of information, and the smart thing is never to go backwards, right? I think that the biggest issue is time. If you're a commissioner or you're a major executive in these leagues, you always seem to be busy with something, right? Like, is there ever a quiet minute? And that limits, you know, how much you can really do. But I think it's a great question, and I wouldn't be surprised if all of these leagues start sharing best practices with each other.
Yeah, because I just feel like that could make sports as a whole even better of just, hey, this has worked for us, you know, especially with the draft. And we talked to David Poyle last week about it, and he said, of course he was paying attention to the draft that the mm-hmm. NFL did, because he feels like they could be doing some of the same things. And the fact that you have, like, the NFL is sitting there watching what everybody else is going to do because their season doesn't start until the fall, that gives them a gauge, you know, where baseball is having to watch Korean baseball to have a gauge of, okay, this is something that we can build upon. I feel like that helps everybody and makes it all better.
Well, I think that, and I think here too, and I agree with you, and I think there's a good chance here the MLB is going to be first. It's not a guarantee, but I think everybody's kind of expecting that. They're outdoors, which gives them an advantage, you've seen all these reports the last couple of days that a return to play protocol is going to be proposed from the league to the players sometime in the next little while. You know, the NHL and the NBA, they're not close to that. So I do think everybody's going to be watching baseball to see how it works, what they do that goes well, and what they do that doesn't go well. So, yes, I certainly agree with that. Did you guys ask David, will he have a Mike Vrabel home setup if the NHL draft happens next month?
That didn't come up, but it's a fair question.
Oh my God, you guys are so wimpy. You should have asked him that.
He did admit that he watched Tiger King, which he said he regretted.
Really?
It.
Really?
Yes, that surprised us, and he did say he regretted it.
He probably loved it. He's just telling me.
Like, honestly, of a list putting together, you know, people that have watched Tiger King, I probably would have had David Boyle at the bottom of the list. So he did admit that. Let's end with this, Elliot. I got a chance Tuesday night to do about a 30-minute interview with Jordan Tutu on Facebook Live. And mm-hmm. we know what he was like in this market, what he meant to this market, especially at the time in this fan base. He was beloved, but you know, been covering the sport a long time. What was the sentiment around the league about a guy like Jordan Tutu back then?
Well, I think when he played, I think there's two ways. There were two ways to look at the Jordan Tutu. I think one was the overall life way, and then one was the way he played way. And then when he retired or was getting to the end, everybody went back to the life way. Like, you know, there's guys who, when they play, when they're on your team, you love them, and when they're not on your team, you hate them.
Yeah.
And Jordan was kind of that guy. Like, the guys who played with him loved him, and the guys who played against him, even if they liked him when they weren't on the ice, they hated him during the games.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at the overall life way, you know, when you come from where Jordan Tutu comes from, unfortunately, the odds are against you. You know, it's a big challenge. And he beat it. And it wasn't an easy line. There were challenges there. You know, family challenges, his own challenges in terms of alcohol. And everything, it wasn't easy, but he got through it. And, you know, when he retired, there were lots of stories about children from Indigenous places in Canada who said, like, I saw what that guy did, and I'm going to follow it. And I think now that he's retired, everybody looks at the positives. Look at what this guy did. Look what this guy accomplished. Look at what this guy – nobody thinks anything less of him, that he had challenges along the way, because he found a way to get through them. So everybody I know who speaks about Jordan Tutu speaks very respectfully of him. And I think everybody recognizes that he beat the odds, and he's respected because of that.
9-plus years sober. It's a fantastic story. He told me that – I asked him to take me back to the day when David Poyle and, you know, Barry Trotz called him in for a meeting, and it was fascinating. He said that, you know, he woke up, like a lot of days, hungover from partying all night, and he gets the call from David Poile, we need to see you in the office. And he said he knew right then, he knew what that was about. And he knew that, he said, I already had those meetings with him, so he knew that this was kind of, this was it. And he broke down and just said, I got to get fixed, or I'm going to be out of the league, or I'm going to be dead. And mm-hmm. he went into that meeting and walked right in and said he just started, you know, he lost it, started crying, and said, I need help. And so it's a fascinating story, really, to his journey to where he is today. And like I said, 9-plus years sober. It's fantastic considering, like you said, where he grew up and none of it, and, mm-hmm. you know, everything surrounding, and his brother committing suicide, and just how open he is on talking about all of that.
Well, I think you realize that when you go through things, you're not alone. Like, you don't have to be an open book about your challenges, but everybody with half a brain understands that there are challenges and we all go through them. They may not be the same challenges, but nobody goes through life unscathed. So everybody gets that, and nobody thinks less of you of it. Nobody who's smart anyway. And I think he also knows that, you know, when he tells young people that you have this, 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 and this, no matter what your goal is, whether it's to be an athlete or something else, you can achieve your goal if you have the will to try to power over a hurdle, or even maybe through a hurdle that comes up your way. It's a great message, and I think everybody loves to see him delivering it.
Yeah, kind of like your message on Thursdays with us. We really appreciate it. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend, okay?
Yep, you do the same. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. Go read his latest edition of 31 Thoughts. Good stuff. We'll hear from a little bit from Philip Forsberg on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. A lot of local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are still open, and they're ready to serve you during these uncertain times. Help them out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery/pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and so much more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Today, Predators forward Philip Forsberg got a chance to catch up through a Zoom call with the local media. Here's some of what he had to say.
Philip, thanks for joining us today. If you just want to maybe give us a few thoughts about, you know, what's been going on in your life the last 7 or 8 weeks, and how you've been staying in shape, and how you've been dealing with the quarantine.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's been a challenging time for all of us. And yeah, me and my girlfriend Erin, we just try to do the best of it. We've been going back and forth, Nashville and her place here in Georgia. And it's just nice. Obviously the apartment in Nashville get a little small at times, so it's good to get here. Her parents has a big property where you can go outside a little bit more and still follow the protocol as much as we can. And yeah, it's been challenging, but working out has been okay. I've obviously been doing a lot of work, just body weight stuff. I got some goodie, came over with some stuff to my apartment that I've been using, and riding the bike and stuff like that. So it's been a challenge, but you got to try to do the best of it.
All right. We'll start with Justin Bradford. Had his hand raised first. Go for it, Justin.
Hey, Philip. Thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate you taking the time to speak with everyone. So obviously you've been very active in playing NHL, doing some online streams, playing against other NHL players. Just how has that been for you as an experience to be playing against other guys from other teams, and just having that to be able to give back to the fans and also hone your skills a little bit too?
It's been fun. I mean, obviously I grew up with that game. I've been playing every game since 99 or 2000 or something like that. And it's awesome. Obviously you prefer to play the real game, but this is a good alternative. And now, and especially it's a great way to interact with fans. And last time, obviously I played with JT Comfer, a guy that I played against hundreds of times in Colorado, but I didn't know him personally. And it was cool getting to know him a little bit, and hear a little bit more about him. And yeah, while we're having a good time playing.
All right. Adam Bingen. 1 second. Okay. Adam, you're up.
Hey, Philip, good to see you. A few of your Swedish teammates made the decision to go back to Sweden during this pause. How much thought did you give yourself, how much thought did you give yourself to going back to Sweden, and what ultimately led for you, led to the decision for you to stay in the States?
A little bit. I mean, at first I was thinking about I was just waiting to see basically what was going to happen, because it sounded like it was going to be kind of quick before, in the start. But then the more you realize that it was going to be a while, that's when you kind of started thinking about maybe making that call. But it was the first time we were down in Georgia, and it was like 85 degrees. I was sitting on the porch here, and my some of my friends were posting pictures from back home, and they're on the lake skating still. So that kind of made the decision for me pretty easy, that it was below 30 back home, and here it was nice weather. So then I just pushed it another month, and I guess that is where we are now. And now it looks more likely that there might be some stuff going on here. So at the moment, there's no point to head home yet.
All right, Brooks Bratton.
Hey, Phil, good to see you. From a hockey standpoint, just wanted to get your thoughts on how you view this maybe personally, the pause, and how you were playing, and how you could come back maybe better. I know some guys have talked about this maybe as a reset of sorts. And then from a team standpoint as well, how do you view the way that you guys were playing as a team, and what it might look like if you are able to come back this summer and play again?
I thought we were starting to catch a little bit of fire there towards the end, I should say, not the final end, hopefully, but towards the break of the season there. And I thought we were playing some really good hockey after, obviously, the coaching change and everything that was going on. I really thought we were picking up our pace, and guys, we were starting to play better, myself included. And obviously, the break might not have come at a great time for us, but at the same time, it was like you said, it can definitely be a little bit of a reset. Everybody that might not have had their best seasons, it kind of starts over at zero again if we come back. And I think for a team like us with the potential that we have, I think that could definitely be a beneficial thing. Like I said, it's whatever happened in the first 70-something games doesn't necessarily matter at all. Now we have a couple months break, and everybody can kind of think about it and reset and come back and hopefully get a chance to compete for the cup. And like I said, with our team, I'm really excited if that turns out to be the case.
All right, back to Justin Bradford. So kind of actually going along the lines, Phil, with snacks and everything too, Swedish snacks and sweets and everything too. I myself just ordered a box to try some of these things. What would you recommend if someone wanted to get a taste of Sweden in terms of candy or salty snacks? What would you recommend to people?
I love licorice. So I guess that's more of a Finnish, but we have a lot of good licorice too in Sweden. And most of you guys don't like that, which is interesting. But so I think that's something that is a little different, but you might have to try that.
Adam, you're up.
Philip, we've heard plenty over the past couple of months about the plans that the NHL might have to resume the season, how long it could go, when it could restart. In your personal opinion, is there a date that you feel like the season would have to come back by in order for you to feel prepared or motivated to go through the slog of a season? Or do you feel like there's a point where you would just hope that the season would stop and you would prepare for next year?
No, I mean, you look at it as an opportunity. I mean, just in being in this league for numbers of years now, you kind of have to relish every opportunity we have to get a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup. And obviously at this situation, like, there's nothing that we can do. We just have to wait and see and let the people that are in charge do what they know best. But same time, as a player, you want to get that chance to compete for it. And so personally, the motivation factor is not going to be a problem at all. It's just about being smart. Like I saw somebody mention about injuries, obviously coming back, possibly jumping right into playoffs after a 3-4 month break, whatever we end up being on, that's going to be different than playing the playoffs, obviously, when you've been playing through 82 games and everybody is up and running. So I think there's definitely things to consider, but I would love to get a chance to compete for it.
Dave Foster, Fox 17, fire away.
Hey, Philip, appreciate you doing this. I wanted to ask you, I know the team was playing well right before the pause, but you had kind of busted out and had a couple of nice games in a row there after by your standards, I would say probably a tougher February. How frustrating was it for you personally to, once you started to get it going, then also kind of have everything stop like that?
Yeah, it's like I mentioned, obviously that's when I, like you said, I personally was starting to feel better. I was playing, I felt like I was playing better even through February, like midway through February, I started to find a little bit of my game again, and obviously didn't really show on the scoreboard with goals and stuff, but I felt like I was playing better. And then funny how it is, first game in March and I get a goal right away. And I think we officially can bury Phil Brery forever. So, but yeah, it's obviously a little bit of frustrating, but also with the season that I have, we can only speak for myself, that it was a little bit encouraging to see that the last, like I said, last two weeks or something like that of the season, I felt like I was myself playing better hockey, and hopefully I can bring that feeling into this season. But obviously that, if in worst case, I'll at least feel good about the end towards going into next season.
All right, back to Brooks.
Bill, what have some of the different emotions been like for you during the pause? I personally feel like maybe you go through some days you're mad at the whole situation, some days you're optimistic. How have you kind of managed things from a mental standpoint?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I think the first, I'd say 2 weeks was weird, because then at least not knowing anything, like you just sit there and you're not sure if you're, yeah, you obviously want to stay in shape because you know it might come back, but it also might not, you might not play until September again. And sitting there in mid-March, obviously the motivation might not have been through the roof. But after those 2 weeks, it was kind of settled in a little bit for me. And like I said, we've been very, very fortunate being able to go back and forth through Nashville and Georgia. It just kind of makes you, yeah, it doesn't, the like real boredom doesn't really hit you too bad. And when it does, we just had to head down here, and we're here right now in Georgia and heading back probably, yeah, somewhere in the early next week. And once we get tired of Nashville again, we'll keep doing that until hopefully we can come back to playing, which definitely has helped in that sense of regard. But yeah, definitely tough to start. But now I feel like you kind of been more or less accepting the fact that you don't know anything. So just let the people that have more authorities worry about it.
All right. Well, Philip, enjoy the sunshine down in Georgia. Thanks for joining us. And thanks everybody who's tuning in on Facebook Live as well. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll see you back in Smashville soon, hopefully.
Sounds great. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
There you go. There was basically the bulk of Philip Forsberg today on his Zoom call with the local media. I know tonight the NFL is going to release their schedule. You're starting to see some things get leaked out there. I told you that it looks like the Patriots, the Bucks, when I think Tom Brady, I'm still thinking Patriots, the Bucks and the Saints could be that first week primetime game, one of those first week one primetime games, starting to see some other things leaked out. So that's coming out tonight at 7 o'clock, and there's going to be special programming around that, and even an hour of something we've talked about on this show that maybe people haven't had a chance to check out also leading up to that hour. So, Chase, with that being said, tell everybody the schedule they can get tonight starting at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, so at 6 o'clock last week, Teron Davenport and I did a really cool game night Facebook Live like you did with Jordan Tutu with Nate Washington, former Titans wide receiver. The stories were absolutely tremendous. He tells one about the Santonio Holmes catch from his perspective in the Super Bowl that is just awesome. So we're going to air that tonight at 6 if you missed it. So you'll hear the audio starting at 6 o'clock on our airways. And then at 7, I'll join Jared Stillman, and we'll do instant reaction as the NFL releases the schedule. I know NFL Network's doing like a three-hour special, but we'll do an hour from 7 to 8 and discuss the Titans schedule, what it looks like. As you said, there have been some stuff leaking out. I've even seen a couple things that say that the Titans and Jags won't meet on Thursday Night Football. So I've seen that floating around.
Wow.
At different places.
We have a development.
I know. So who knows what it'll actually look like. But Jared and I will have a reaction as it happens starting at 7. So should be cool. But again, if you missed the Nate Washington conversation, you definitely got to listen. You got to check it out. He even has a good Randy Moss story, too.
Nate Washington was always a fun guy to cover. So What is he up to these days? You said he'd been dabbling in coaching, right?
Yeah, and that's something that he gets into that. He would like to do that. He would like to coach more. As you guys know, during training camp, a lot of times they'll have coaching interns, and those are the former players. Michael Griffin did it with the Titans a few years ago, and he did that with the Tampa Bay Bucks. He played for Bruce Arians in Pittsburgh. Bruce Arians was his OC, as was Ken Wisenhunt, but Bruce Arians was one of his offensive coordinators during his time in Pittsburgh. So he did the coaching internship with Tampa during training camp last year, and so he's been doing some of that. He's been doing some public speaking since his playing days ended, but he did express a lot of interest in being a coach at some level, whether it's high school or college or the NFL. But that's, he loves teaching, and that's something that he really enjoyed.
All right, so all that starting tonight at 6 o'clock. So check it out, and the NFL, and you guys will kind of walk through whatever is being thrown out there, how they do the show tonight, unveil the NFL schedule. And so it'll be interesting to see what we know the opponents for the Titans and what's their home games and away games, but dates and how it'll all play out. By the way, will they get any more later games because of their success last year? I mean, we have been so accustomed to so many noon games. Do they get a couple late afternoon games because of their success?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And those aren't prime time, obviously, but some of those are the national audience. I mean, you get
it's
CBS.
More of a prime time game because there's fewer games, right? So
yeah.
You have more eyeballs on the later afternoon starts.
Yeah, especially when they do the CBS or Fox do the doubleheader windows, that the late game is, Fox calls it America's Game of the Week. For usually NFC matchups. But yeah, that's a fair point that I could see that. And if as the schedule comes out, if we see more of those games, then I'm going to start feeling nervous about my over of 3, even counting the Thursday night game of national games, because if they get more of those Saturday or Sunday afternoon games, that tells me the NFL is setting up for a flex that, okay, the Titans could be in the flex window, but we're not ready to give them a Sunday night game as of yet.
Yeah.
Still very confident with my over 2.5.
All right, like I said, I hope you're right. I don't know. That would, to me, in my mind, be two Monday Night Football games, and I just think that's, you don't see that because there's no proof that they're going to give them a Sunday night game on the schedule. I mean, just doesn't happen to the Titans. So there's just, like I said, there's no proof of it.
You're right. It hasn't historically since NBC got that package over 10 years ago. That and I'm sitting here. Well, I guess I could Google this for sure, because I am curious of how many Sunday night games that they've actually appeared on in the history of the NBC Sunday Night Football package.
We're not talking about being flexed in. It still has hardly ever happened, but there have been a couple of flex into it. But I mean, like, starting points of where we're talking about schedule release, they've never been a Sunday night game on the schedule. True?
That it's never been scheduled?
Yes.
I think you're right.
I can't
never
remember. I don't remember. Like, scheduled primetime Sunday night game?
Okay. So I actually have, I'm trying to figure this out. In, as my cat, I have a Stanley situation right now, Willie.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, wanting to be a part of the show. Okay, so the first year in 2006 that NBC got that package, they weren't on it. The Titans did not appear on it. I would say the best candidates would be, they were flexed the following year. That was the first time, the 2007, they were flexed.
Right. That was when they had to beat the Colts. The
okay.
Colts rested everybody, and they won.
I do believe there was a
barely
game against the Colts that was a scheduled game on Sunday Night Football that wasn't flexed. I think that was, it's some, like, maybe 2009?
Yeah, I think there was a.
They were on the kickoff.
That sounds
Thursday.
Right.
They were on the kickoff Thursday game in 2009 against.
Oh,
Pittsburgh,
that's right. 2009, I think, is right because it was the year after they had the big season. They had the bad 0-6 start.
Was not 2009.
It was 2009. They lost. They were Sunday, October 11th, Sunday Night Football. They lost to the Colts at Nissan Stadium.
I remember we did our we were doing a Sunday night show on Fox back in those days, and I remember doing that on site.
That was
there.
A Sunday night game, huh?
Yes.
That was the game they got waxed here?
31-9. It was code blue.
It was not pretty.
Wasn't that the first code blue?
No, the first code blue was the year before, and they had won that game.
Okay.
That was part of the 10-0 start.
The reason I remember it now, I was at that game. I went to that game on Sunday, and I was all excited because it was a Sunday night game, and then they got shellacked.
But I think the first code blue was a Monday night, I think.
It was
think.
A Monday night game.
Yeah.
That's right, in 08.
But 09 was a code blue.
They beat the Colts.
Yeah, that was a big win. And then the next year, it was a different feeling. That start to that year, they just got off to the worst start. By the end of the year, they looked more like the team that they were supposed to look like. But it just, they would, you know, remember things culminated with the ugly game up in New England.
Yeah, the next time that they were on Sunday Night Football was after that 09 season. Was last year or two
last
years
last year the flex.
Yeah.
What was the year Broadus hit the 60-yarder here to beat Indianapolis? What year was that?
That was
06?
06.
That was
06.
Is that Vince's rookie year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
When they got on a roll, they won the whole second half of their season. When they got, you know, they started
Well, they lost to the Patriots in the last game, and they needed a lot of other things to go right to have a chance. And a lot of them, I think all of them, did go right.
All of them did go right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but
I have
they had lost their game.
As we wrap this up, a fun fact for you, because you guys brought up the Bucs, or Darren, you brought up the Bucs and how many appearances they'll have. In the history of NBC having this current package, they've appeared twice.
Who, the Bucs or the Titans?
The Bucs.
Well,
appearances counting the postseason on NBC Sunday night, the however you want to call it, they've had two appearances. Titans have had four.
Yeah. Well, that's about to all change.
Indeed.
It is closing time. That'll do it for us today. Enjoy the weather. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to close out the week. We'll see you then.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.